I think someone who comes from a system that doesn't have a multi-party system looks at this oddly. For someone who's like me, who's lived here long enough, it makes total sense.
I remember that part of society was kind of insecure about not having a government in place. They argued that Germany is in an unstable condition at the time.
This Ausbildung system that I think is very effectively used here in Germany, we simply don't have the equivalent in the United States.
Hey guys, it's Daniel again. Today, it's a November day outside that couldn't be any more typical. It's gray and foggy, it's drizzling from the sky, and you keep asking yourself if the sun actually came out this morning already or not. And you know what? Isn't this a beautiful day for listening to your favorite podcast? I say it is. Welcome to Germerica's episode number 4. I'm happy to introduce you to a friend of mine later on. His name is Matt Lemieux, and he's a university lecturer at the law faculty of the University of Münster and Osnabrück in Germany. He's also a former manager of the America's Civil Liberties Union in Nebraska and Missouri, and a constitutional law researcher. When Matt moved to Germany in 2004, he made his law PhD and later became the chair of the Democrats Abroad Germany group in Münster and Osnabrück. We've been talking about the coalition negotiations between the German Social Democrats, the Liberals and the Green Party that are still ongoing at the moment, even though the election in Germany was in late September. And he's listed his top 3 things for me, where he thinks the American and German educational systems distinguish the most from each other. All right, Matt, I'm glad you had some time today.
Hi, Daniel. Great to be here.
You're at the university right now?
Yeah, I run the foreign law program here, and I teach American law.
Right, and just tell me in a sentence, how happy are you that you can give your lectures in person again?
I'm very happy to be able to do that and see the students' faces again. It's still not the same because they have to wear masks, but it's certainly better than the online format. With that said, we learned a lot through the online format that we're going to use in our program as well.
Mm-hmm. So Matt, I would like to talk to you about 2 things today. The first thing that is on my mind, given the occasion with the Ampel coalition talks at the moment, I'd like to talk to you about the formation of government in the US in comparison to Germany, how that works and how that differs from what we witness right now. And the second thing maybe is because you're a uni professor, I'd like to dive into the educational systems in the US and Germany a little bit. So why don't we start with politics? You, as I already know, you are active with Democrats Abroad. So I think it's fair to say that you're a very political person.
That's a fair assessment, right?
So how are you evaluating the coalition talks right now? You don't hear much, do you?
No, but just the mere fact that you have coalition talks is something that's obviously foreign to someone who comes from a country where we only have 2 parties that basically take part in our system. I mean, we have other parties in the United States as well, but because of the way our system is structured, it really is just a two-party system. And so the mere fact that the parties are getting together and talking with one another is somewhat strange from an American perspective, especially today, considering how divided our country is in the United States and how far apart the two parties are. So it's fascinating to just watch this take place.
Mm-hmm. Did you hear about Angela Merkel in Rome, that she was accompanied by Olaf Scholz, and that was sort of astonishing for all the other state leaders? That I think it was Boris Johnson who said, well, that's really interesting to see this peaceful transition of power.
And it's no surprise that Boris Johnson would say that as well, because he comes from a similar system, right? Even though recently there was a coalition in England. Normally, it really is just the two main parties battling it out for who gets to be prime minister. And you have the same dynamic there as you have in the United States because of the first-past-the-post system that both countries have, a kind of winner-take-all system without proportional representation. And so I think someone who comes from a system that doesn't have proportional representation, doesn't have a multi-party system, looks at this oddly. For someone who's like me, who's lived here long enough, seeing Olaf Scholz next to Angela Merkel, knowing that Olaf Scholz is also the finance minister in the government that's currently the caretaker government, it makes total sense. But to somebody looking at this from the outside, coming from a system like Johnson or a system like we have in the United States, yeah, I could see how they would think that was odd. It would have been astonishing to see Barack Obama walk out with Donald Trump in something more than the one little meeting that they had in the Oval Office after Trump was elected. That just doesn't happen in our systems like it does here. And I think the other big difference too, and why it's not astonishing to me because I've lived here for so long now, is that because you have to build coalitions here in Germany, the parties can't be, I mean, obviously they battle against each other in the political arena, but it can't be to the point where they end up hating each other, because you could never govern in a coalition with somebody that you hate, right? And so again, watching those two leaders interact with one another, considering that they were in a coalition together and might one day again, the parties have to be in a coalition together. And even though they won't be together now in the new government, unless things fall apart, again, it's a totally different dynamic because of the coalition, simply one that we don't have in the United States and quite frankly, could probably use in the United States.
Yeah, I agree. But if we think about, you mentioned Obama and Donald Trump. I mean, that was sort of extraordinary, I think, because Trump really did not seek to have any good relation with Obama. However, I was wondering if you could tell me if this was any different with Obama's predecessor. So has there been any significantly different tone and relation between Bush and Obama at the time of the transition?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we saw with Trump was substantially different. If you look at former presidents and the former president's club and how they interact with one another, I think the Clintons and the Bushes are classic examples of this. I mean, Bill Clinton and old man Bush, the first George Bush, they duked it out in the political arena and they were political enemies. But once Clinton won and Bush stepped aside, you can go back and find quotes of Barbara Bush, George Bush's wife, and George W. Bush's mother. You can go back and find quotes of them saying that they treat Bill Clinton as if they're one of the, like a son. They become so close after that. Or you can go back and take a look at pictures of the way that the Obamas and George W. Bush and Laura Bush interact with one another. There was a collegiality among former presidents because of the rarefied air that they all keep that I think Trump broke. And so it was something totally different. Now, it might have been like that 100 years ago the same way. But as far as modern history goes in the United States, what we saw with Trump and how he dealt with ex-presidents and now how he's being dealt with as an ex-president is unprecedented in the modern era.
Mm. Yeah. Speaking of history, I was wondering if you could enlighten me, because what we see in Germany right now is a pretty fairly long period where we don't have a real government that is in charge, but instead we still have the old government that is holding up and kind of waiting until the next government takes over. So this has been going on for like 2 months already, and we still don't know how long the conversations between the Greens, the FDP, and the SPD will still go on until they finally present results. So there's this vacuum right now, and I wanted to ask you if If there was any time in the US where the transition took longer than usual, or where the US has been without a formal government for a few weeks?
I mean, when the transition is supposed to take place is set in our Constitution. So theoretically, I guess it's possible in a situation where the outcome of the election is still in doubt on the date that calls for, in the Constitution, that calls for transition. If that were ever the case, then I suppose we would be in this situation where it would be unclear who would govern. We've never found ourselves in that position before. And so what you normally have in the United States is a situation, is a period of time where after the election, you do have what we would call in English a lame duck government who still governs. In the United States, that's a period from the beginning of November to the end of January when the new president takes place, or the beginning of January when the new Congress takes place. And by the way, under the original Constitution, that lame duck period used to be all the way until the middle of March. So we used to have a government in place for 4 months that might have lost the prior election. So that part is something that we have in the United States, but we also have a firm date for a transition. And that's what's unique here, is to be able to see an election that takes place like what happened, 4 years ago, where the election was in September and there wasn't a new government until Easter, if I remember correctly. This idea of not having a firm date for a transition would be foreign to us, but not unthinkable. We had this situation in 2000 where the result of the election was up in the air between George W. Bush and Al Gore. And Al Gore eventually conceded, but had he not, and had the Supreme Court not stepped in also, I guess it would be conceivable that at the date of transition, when the new president is supposed to get inaugurated, that there would be a need for some type of a caretaker government. Now, I'm trying to remember, because I used to know this because I gave a lecture on this before the election in 2020.
So I got you on the real point here.
Yeah, never dreaming that Trump would actually try to overturn the election. If I remember correctly, what would happen is if it was still unclear who won the presidential election, I believe the sitting vice president would take over as a caretaker for the president. Now, again, the Congress would have taken office, I believe it's January 5th or 6th, according to the Constitution. But the question would be, who would be the president? And I'm pretty sure that the sitting vice president would take over in a caretaker role until the election was sorted out. But again, we've never been there before, and I hope we never get there before, because if we do, that means the system broke down.
Yeah, you just mentioned our elections 4 years ago, when these coalition talks took a lot longer because the three parties that spoke to each other eventually ended up announcing a failure. And so our head of state, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, kind of begged his party to step into yet another grand coalition. And so that took very long. But I remember that part of society was kind of insecure about not having a government in place. They argued that Germany is in an unstable condition at the time. And did you, if you remember observing this 4 years ago, did you then think that this is sort of a risk for a country not having a stable government?
I think I didn't, only because I was aware of other countries around us who've had similar problems, you know, come to mind. Belgium comes to mind, Netherlands comes to mind, where they had the same type of situations where you had caretaker governments, and they always seemed able to carry out a functioning government, even though it wasn't the one that was elected. And so I guess knowing what I've seen in other countries didn't make me feel uneasy. Now, of course, the size of Germany compared to the other countries plays a role in that, I suppose. But I personally didn't have any discomfort with that. But I remember people expressing that view here.
Mm. Just to clarify, I mean, also on the international stage, for example, if Angela Merkel is taking part in a huge summit. Let's take G20 as an example. She just doesn't have the authority anymore, at least not 100%, because everyone knows that she's technically out of office.
Yeah, and then obviously that becomes an international question, and whether you could even have a constructive dialogue with her or whoever the caretaker leader is at that point. But again, I think you can draw an analogy to the United States, and you know, our presidents still conduct business for the 2.5 months that they're president, while their successor is waiting to come on. And I think world leaders realize that whoever they're dealing with at that point can't bind the United States per se, but still exercises authority on behalf of the United States. And so if there's at least some kind of a short-term response that's necessary, obviously the so-called lame duck president, as well as the caretaker government, unless I'm wrong, you can correct me if I'm wrong, would still have the ability, at least in the short term, to react. But I think you're right. I think as far as long term goes, you would have the same problem in the United States with the lame duck president for those 2.5 months until the new president gets sworn in.
And right now, in the midst of the pandemic, I mean, the caretaker government in Germany still needs to decide big things that matter for a large part of the population here. So they are still into daily politics, isn't there like a gentleman's agreement for a caretaker government not to roll out any big steps?
I know exactly what you mean. And I think with any kind of constitutional law question, there's the constitution and then there are norms and traditions, or a gentleman's agreement, as you put it, which I would characterize as norms or traditions. And those obviously play a role. And when those break down, the system breaks down as well. And so one would, I mean, we're in some unprecedented times, though, aren't we, right? Is there a norm or tradition that we can go back and compare to that demands an immediate response like we might have before us right now all over the world concerning COVID? One would hope that they would be aware of what those norms and traditions are, if there's even something that would guide them here, and they wouldn't go beyond that, because once you break those down, then that is problematic going forward. I simply don't know the answer to that. Do you know if there's a comparative situation that a caretaker government's ever been in, like the crisis they're in right now?
I'd say no spontaneously, but because it feels so drastic and so unprecedented, what kind of challenges are ahead of us? And yeah, I tend to say no.
And I think what's interesting, and this is something that you can answer for me, from the media accounts that I've been listening to, it seems like the coalition partners are wanting to go and do something in the Bundestag, right? Which they could do, because they, even though they're not the government yet, they do hold a majority inside of the Bundestag. So they theoretically could pass a law right now as the three parties, couldn't they?
They could. However, they're not doing it because it's not yet completely in trockenen Tüchern, as I would say in German, that this government is going to form itself. So maybe that's one reason for their hesitation.
Yeah.
We'll see how this is going to continue. Anyway, maybe coming back to the university, as I said earlier, I'd like to know a few things about how you find the German educational system that you're part of, if you compare that to your background. I think you've been teaching in, what was that, Michigan earlier?
Yeah, I worked in Michigan. I did some teaching, but I was more on the professional side of it, not the educational side of it.
Mm-hmm. And when did you actually go to law school?
Oh, gosh, early 90s.
And what made you decide to go to Germany and teach there instead of somewhere in the US?
To be perfectly honest with you, I have a German wife who got homesick and wanted to move back to Germany.
That's a good reason, I guess.
And so I quit my nonprofit, non-governmental organization job that I had in the United States and moved here without knowing what I was going to do. What I'm doing today, I kind of fell into by mistake. It wasn't by plan, actually. And then one thing led to another, and I wrote a Doktorarbeit and went down that road. But that wasn't the original plan. Just worked out that way.
If you just spontaneously think about maybe the three biggest differences in our educational systems, I know that's a tough question, but I guess that's part of my job to ask some tricky questions sometimes. Could you name three things for me that you find different?
So I think the first one, the obvious one, is the cost. It's enormously expensive to obtain a higher education, a higher education degree in the United States. And you simply don't have that expense here. I mean, to the point where my wife and I had talked somewhat seriously about moving back at one point, we both realized we probably couldn't send our daughter to a university there because it's so expensive. And if you haven't saved up for a long time to afford that or don't have some independent wealth, you're either faced with a situation that you don't go, or if you do go, you have to have an enormous amount of loans. I was just listening to a podcast last week, and they were saying that the value of American student debt, so loans that students have taken out, is over $1 trillion.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. So that is by far the biggest difference. I think one of the differences I noticed when I first moved here, and I thought that it was a big difference, and now I think it's irrelevant, was the amenities that American universities have. Everything there seems to be new, seems to be top as far as technological goes. When I first started teaching here, not every room had a projector in it, for example, and that would be unthinkable. That would have been unthinkable in the United States. As you stay here longer, you realize that that really isn't so important. And perhaps allowing the students to have an education that they can afford as opposed to one that they cannot afford is more important. And then as far as law school goes, because that's where I am, the biggest difference is the age that the students start studying law. It was for me to get my law degree, I had to have a bachelor's degree first. And a bachelor's degree in the United States takes 4 years. And so I was 22, 23 when I started law school. And when I first got here and the students were 18 years old, 19 years old at the oldest, that was astonishing to me that you would come right out of our equivalent of high school and immediately start studying law. Again, the longer that I'm here, I realize that's perfectly manageable. But that was a big difference when I first got here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You said that when you first came, that some classrooms didn't have projectors, for example. I think one reason for that might be due to the financing system, because the federal government is not supposed to help out institutions like local universities, because it's Ländersache. So the states decide and the states fund the universities, and the federal government is not allowed for them to support them. However, I think in the US, I mean, also the states decide about education. But is it possible for the federal government to at least give some funding?
It's absolutely possible. And in fact, the federal government uses its spending power oftentimes to get states to do things. In our system, our system of federalism is a bit more strict as far as the separation of powers between the states and the federal government, at least the way the U.S. Supreme Court has interpreted it. And under current Supreme Court interpretation, the states cannot, or the federal government cannot order states to do things. But what the federal government can do, what Congress can do, is say, listen, we want you to do this at your school. Here's a pot of money. If you agree to do this, we'll give you the money. And so often Congress uses its spending power, and federal money flows in the direction of things that traditionally only belong to the states, and it's perfectly allowable. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's one of the only tools that Congress has sometimes to get states to do things.
Mm. And speaking of costs, I was wondering if you, just let me know if you don't want to answer this. I would perfectly understand. But since you're active with Democrats abroad, I was wondering if you, at the early stage, supported Bernie Sanders, or did you, from the beginning, support Joe Biden?
To be perfectly honest with you, see, Democrats abroad. I'll put that hat on now and take off my university hat. And Democrats abroad is an official part of the Democratic Party, and in fact, internationally as a group, we're seen as a state. And so, when the primary for the president took place in the Democratic Party, we held our own primary worldwide, and people were able to cast their votes here in Germany. And Democrats abroad worldwide counted up all of their votes, and we sent three delegates, or I think five delegates, to the Democratic National Convention. Mm-hmm. And they cast a vote for a candidate just like any other state would do it at the convention. So we had a Democrats abroad international primary. It's the only time we can ever vote for anything American from where we live. Otherwise, we have to do it by mail. Mm. But it's because it's inside of the party. It's not part of the federal election structure. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just asking you about Bernie Sanders, because he was known for his demand to make education free for everyone.
Right. And so when we had our global primary, there were actually more people than just Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden on our ballot. Another person who was on the ballot was Elizabeth Warren, and that's why I voted for her, in the primary. So I didn't vote for either one of the two, to answer your question directly. I'm familiar with Bernie's plan. I think what's missing in the United States that you have here is this Ausbildung system that I think is very effectively used here in Germany. We simply don't have the equivalent in the United States. And I think too often in the United States, people are funneled into university when they don't really need to be in university. It could be done through a system like we have here in Germany, through an Ausbildung. And that would probably already save people a lot of debt that they get into going to university when they don't have to. So I actually think that Bernie Sanders, when he was talking about these things, I think he was only hitting the tip of the iceberg. And I wish he would have gone even farther and said, we got to reform the whole system, and we got to do it in a way that doesn't mean that everybody has to go to university. In fact, we should be having another way for people to get where they want to go without having to go to the university. And so in that respect, I think Sanders' program fell a little bit short and left out a lot of people. Think about when you go back and look at the results of 2016 and even 2020, and there's this whole view that the Democrats are now the party of elites and have left especially lower education people behind. And then think about Bernie Sanders' proposal, and who did that help? That really only helped people who had achieved a certain level of education. And I think that left out an important group that the Democrats need to be targeting. And so I would have hoped for actually something more.
I see. So we could kind of add this point as the fourth aspect in comparison with the two countries. So also, I agree with you that this is a good thing that we have this Berufsausbildung, so this professional kind of apprenticeship. However, in Germany, we have a tendency right now that more and more people go to university instead of making this apprenticeship somewhere. And that is because in school, they are being prepared to go to university. So some argue that Germany wants to just be better in these international comparisons and climb a few steps upward and not be down at the bottom anymore. But that's not what it's about. I mean, it's about giving young people good perspectives individually for themselves.
I agree. And I'm also beginning to see here in Germany what you see in the United States, which is, I think, the undervaluing, and I mean this from a societal perspective, not from me personally, the undervaluing of certain jobs. And I think we got to change that mentality. I mean, there's a reason. I know people who own plumbing companies here in Germany, for example, the Klempner, and they say it's hard for me to find people. And I think part of the reason for this shortage of people who engage in trades and crafts and handiwork is that for whatever reason, society has decided they don't value that as much anymore. And I think that's an absolute mistake that you see, that you've seen in the United States for decades now. And I do think that's part of what's going on here in Germany as well. And it's somewhat of a worldwide or at least a Western problem.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. When I remember my time at the University of Mississippi, I think there were a few freshmen who I stood in contact to. They studied something completely different, actually, but they, at first, in their first year, they needed to visit general courses with totally different subjects just as a help for them to find their interests. Is that the case in any of the universities in the U.S.?
It is, and that's another big difference. And so we could add that maybe as the fifth big difference is in the United States, we usually don't start studying in our so-called major in our area that we want to get a degree in until our third year. And the first 2 years of university studies is what we normally refer to as liberal arts or general education. And so we have to take a variety of different classes before we say, okay, now I want to study political science, or now I want to study sociology or engineering or whatever, right? And so what you saw is what typically takes place in American universities. I would argue that what's going on in those first 2 years is often what takes place in the gymnasium here during the last couple of years. And I say that because my wife, she came to the United States after gymnasium and went to the University of Nebraska. And she said, during these first 2 years of general studies, she said, I already did this. This is exactly what we were doing in the 12th and 13th grades in gymnasium in Bremen, where she's from. And it made me realize that perhaps when students leave gymnasium here in Germany, they might be farther ahead than a lot of American high school students are, and some of the general education that we're supposed to be getting in our first 2 years of university education is actually taking place in the gymnasium here in Germany.
Hmm. Yeah, I was going to say or suggest rather that this is not a bad thing to make it mandatory for students to have an orientation year. I mean, it's perfectly reasonable, but why not a year earlier? When they're still in high school, so they can also decide, and this should include jobs that you don't need to study for. I mean, to raise awareness for the fact that there is more outside in this world than just academic jobs.
Right. Yeah. On the other hand, I still see students here who come here, start studying law because they weren't sure what to do. and so maybe having an extra year here as well at the university to try to figure out what they want to do might not be a bad idea, but the system seems to work here. So,
yeah. So just out of curiosity, what's the course called that you're giving at 4 o'clock?
It's American Constitutional Law. And today we'll be talking about freedom of speech. I give a series of three lectures on freedom of speech as part of this course. And these students are in their second year of our foreign law program. And they take a course in private law and a course in constitutional law in this semester. And I teach the constitutional law course.
Oh, sounds
exciting. Are you giving that course in English?
Yes, I give all my courses in English, thank goodness. Had we done this in German, you would have seen why I'm glad I could do it in English. The all the courses that we give in this program are taught in the language of the Rechtsordnung, of the legal system, and almost always by native speakers as well. That's what makes the program, I think, something special.
Now, even if I'm not a part of or not a student anymore, is this open for anyone? Could I just, if I'm interested, come and join for one lecture?
I think just somebody walking off the street into the lecture probably would be frowned upon here at the university. But I know that the university has programs to open up the classes to people who want to start their studies early, for younger people or for older people as well. I'm missing the name of the program right now that they have, but there are ways for people to take part in university courses if they're not even students. Otherwise, if people just want to come by, then normally they have to talk to me first and I have to kind of sneak them in.
But I'm happy you you mentioned the younger people that are also interested in your courses now, so that I don't feel as part of one of these seniors over 60 and 70 sitting in the rows. Well, have a good time then in your course, and thank you so much that you joined me today.
It was my pleasure, and thanks for doing this in English. It was much easier for me.
Thanks. See you.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye. And that's it for today. Thank you for tuning in. All that's left for me to say is, I'd be thrilled to welcome you again in January for episode number 5. I'm already scouting for my next guest to talk to. Have a nice Advent season, and enjoy Christmas with your friends and family. Until next time. Thank you.